Hey everybody, thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Nick Blumberg. Amanda Vinicky has the evening off. Mayor Brandon Johnson says some alders are acting more like adolescents.
Some of the steps and measures that are being taken, these are some individuals are having tantrums right now. It's time to grow up. People in Chicago don't have time for that.
The mayor cuts his proposed property tax increase in half to $150 million, but says a budget deal is still a ways off, with a December 31st deadline approaching fast. After months of negotiations with no contract, Chicago Teachers Union members rally, trying to put pressure on the school CEO and calling on the mayor for an assist. Meanwhile, Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle applauds passage of the county's budget with no property tax or fee hikes.
Prosecutions should be based on facts. Prosecutions should not be based on vindictiveness. This was a vindictive persecution, not a prosecution. Let's not make any mistake about that.
The state Supreme Court overturns Jussie Smollett's conviction for faking a hate crime against himself. And in federal court, former alderman turned FBI mole Danny Solis takes the stand in the corruption trial of former House Speaker Michael Madigan. And now to our Week in Review panel. Joining us are Jake Sheridan of the Chicago Tribune, Melody Mercado of Block Club Chicago, Rima Amin of Chalkbeat Chicago, and Rob Hart of WBBM News Radio. Thank you all for being here. Let's get right to it. Jake, we just saw some of Mayor Johnson's evident frustration with the city council there. Is it fair to say that frustration goes both ways now?
It definitely goes both ways. You know, the city council is super frustrated with the mayor's original $300 million proposal. That's why they struck it down. As played in the intro, the mayor's current proposal is $150 million property tax hike with $150 of other tax raises. That's mostly on cloud computing software and subscriptions, so like your Netflix, as well as some efficiencies in federal stimulus money spending. But whether or not that new $150 million property tax hike actually sticks, that's a huge question in the city council right now. Aldermen are still really frustrated with that property tax hike.
Yeah, do we have a good sense of how they got to 150 versus 300? I mean, do alders feel like the mayor and his budget staff are being transparent or are collaborating?
You know, I think when the original $300 million property tax hike came out, most aldermen were really frustrated with that number and felt like the mayor wasn't speaking with them. The mayor certainly said that he's collaborating more. And, you know, when I speak with aldermen, it seems like they feel that way too. But some were caught off guard by this $150 million number when it came out on Sunday. I think a lot of aldermen still want to see that number come down more. They sense more collaboration, but I don't know if they feel like the budget is, the property tax hike is where they want it to be at.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some reporting, for example, Alderman Jeanette Taylor saying, okay, let's get it down to 120. So it seems like they still want more.
Yeah, and several aldermen have told me they want to see that number at zero. So where it actually lands, it's definitely going to be interesting to see. I think there's a really good chance it could come down farther.
Yeah, I think a lot of people want to see it at zero. I mean, you know, Rob, this is a tactic you see sometimes, propose a huge increase and then walk it back to lessen the blow. Given the infighting, though, that, you know, Jake's reported on and other folks, does that feel like what's happening here? Is this a negotiating tactic, or is this just genuinely kind of a messy budget process?
I think it's a messy budget process. I mean, the question here is, you're asking, as the mayor of the city of Chicago with a 14% approval rating, you are asking members of the city council to vote for a property tax hike, which in and of itself is politically unpopular and puts their political futures in jeopardy. And unless you can say, look, down the line, I'm going to protect you electorally in 2027, do you take that risk?
Yeah, it's a pretty big gamble for a lot of folks. Melody, it's not necessarily going to plug the city's budget deficit, but the Block Club CBS investigation out this week, you found the city is owed some $20 million in police overtime payments from special event organizers. Why haven't they paid up?
Yeah, and that $20 million figure is just from this year alone.
Yeah.
So we're talking tens of millions of dollars of unpaid overtime geared towards street festivals and special events. Look, basically, departments are not talking to each other. Mm. Through a lot of record requests, we found that the city is actually not retroactively charging for this overtime, although they are required to by city ordinance. And of course, festival producers that I've talked to have not necessarily known that they're supposed to be paying this back. And personally, if I was a festival organizer, I don't know if I would want to open my mouth and voluntarily pay for expensive police overtime.
Yeah, I think that's the kind of thing that unless the bill comes, you probably keep quiet. I mean, do you think there's going to be an effort to force organizers to pay up here?
I think that there needs to be some sort of collaborative effort to make this more equitable for festival producers. It's no secret that producing street festivals, your favorite neighborhood street festivals, have gotten more expensive because of inflation. And these street festivals are not allowed to retroactively charge an entrance fee. So they're not able to work with a lot of money here when it comes to profit. But at the end of the day, it is a city ordinance. And the question is, do we get rid of that? Do we fix it somehow to maybe offer some additional cuts to that where maybe they're only paying a percentage? But CPD has said that they don't have a seat at the table here, and they're asking that they could be retroactively more part of this process with DCASE so that they can figure something out. Police are tired. They're working a lot of overtime. CPD has a shortage right now. It's no secret. And so pulling some of your officers from the south side or working special divisions and whatnot to patrol a street festival is not actually extremely productive for CPD.
And it seems like in warm weather, there's about 15 festivals every
right.
weekend, too. Rima, at the same time that the mayor's working on the city budget, Chalk Pete reporting this week, the Chicago Teachers Union is asking the mayor to help move things along with their contract negotiations. Do we have any sense of whether the mayor's jumping into the CTU contract debate, whether he's got the bandwidth for that?
So we're not aware of a formal response to the union president, Stacey Davis Gates' formal letter to the mayor asking him to kind of step in. Of course, the mayor and the CTU are very close allies, and I am sure he gets regular updates about contract negotiations from his allies or from his deputy mayor of labor, Bridget Early. But, Bridget Early did tell us and other news organizations that the Johnson administration doesn't actually feel like CPS is bargaining in good faith. They were pretty extraordinary comments that she made last night. And so that could be a signal that City Hall may step in here and turn up the heat a little bit.
Yeah, it's interesting. Usually in the past couple rounds of negotiations, you've seen CTU bashing the mayor. Here they're asking the mayor to jump into the fray.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a different political environment. The CTU is responsible for getting the mayor elected, and so they see a friend in City Hall. They see someone who is ideologically aligned with them. And I think that helps explain some of how different negotiations are being approached this time around.
Yeah, I want to come back to CTU, but, Jake kind of putting a bow on some of the budget conversation. How close does it look like we're going to get to the December 31st deadline before there's a deal?
I was talking with an alderman today at City Hall, and I told him, I think there's a 1% chance that I'm going to have to cancel my New Year's party. And he said it's higher than 1%. I think we'll certainly get closer than we've been in recent years. Most budgets are resolved by now. Mm-hmm. We're going to get into mid-December without a doubt. There's a lot of holidays. A lot of people are out of town. It's hard to make quorum. And it's going to be harder to do the kind of deal making that's going to be needed to close this. So, it's a really big deal if the city goes past December 31st. I don't think anyone in the city council, I don't think that anyone in the mayor's office wants to do that. So they got to get a deal, but it might be closer to New Year's than other years.
Okay, well, hopefully you don't have to put the champagne flutes away just yet. We'll see what happens. Rima, back to the CTU, they held a rally yesterday pledging to resist President-elect Trump and the Project 2025 agenda that's been laid out by the Heritage Foundation. What exactly was the union calling for there?
So the union, exactly kind of what you said, that if there are mandates federally will be targeting LGBTQ students, for example, or marginalized populations, they want to push back against that. They raise the question of whether Trump is going to get rid of the Department of Education and what that means for funding for schools. But they also use the rally to turn up again the heat on CPS CEO Pedro Martinez, and really just calling for CPS to come to a deal. The district leaders actually yesterday kind of presented their side of negotiations. And so yesterday was very heavy on both sides kind of publicly sparring a little bit about what's going on.
Yeah, it seems like from all the reporting, the two sides are still fairly far apart. There might be an independent fact finder coming in, but who knows what comes of that. It still seems pretty contentious.
We don't have any sense that this is heading towards a strike as it has in previous contract years. But yeah, things are really tense. And of course, for the past couple months, CPS CEO Martinez's job has been in question. The mayor has asked him to resign, and he's still overseeing the Chicago schools. And so there's lots of leadership shakeups happening at the same time that these negotiations are happening. So it's very tense, is what I'll say.
Yeah, I mean, and the CTU is, among lots of different organizations thinking through what a second Trump administration might look like. But if you look at an organization, like a labor union, Rob, how much exactly is there that they can do to resist, this whatever this administration tries to enact?
Well, they can plant their flag. But I think there's a much larger issue, though, when we talk about local institutions and what they are going to do in a second Trump administration. And that is, look at the map of the city of Chicago on Election Day, November 5th of this year, and where Republicans and where Donald Trump made his greatest gains. I mean, obviously, it's where the cops and the firefighters live, mm-hmm. Edison Park, Mount Greenwood. But if you look at the near southwest side, a lot of Hispanic neighborhoods is where Donald Trump made his greatest gains compared to 2020. And if I'm a local institution trying to figure out how to plot a course of the future, look back to Election Day and see why were they receptive to his message? What did they like about what the Trump campaign was selling? And then cater your response to addressing some of their needs.
Yeah, trying to meet folks where they're at, which could be a tall order for some of the CTU leadership, given a lot of the progressive positions that they stake out. As we mentioned in the setup package, the state Supreme Court overturned Jussie Smollett's hoax hate crime conviction. Say that five times fast. Melody, is this never-ending saga coming to an end, finally, please?
I hope so. I think for everyone's sake, I think we can say that this book is closed, and I think that we're seeing one person in particular take a victory lap here, and that's State's Attorney Kim Fox, who has repeatedly said that it should have been overturned because essentially you can't try someone twice,
right.
And she argues that that is what happened. And so, I think it's said and done, hopefully, this time.
Yeah, I saw an interview with her where she was saying, this is criminal procedure 101. So, I mean, as she's sort of closing out her tenure, you have to imagine this is a positive note for her to be ending on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen her making the media tours as well. And she's really pushed hard on how she feels that her, as some people will call, more progressive agenda has been successful in overturning about 250 wrongful convictions and making work to bring into light issues with police torture and things of that nature.
Jake, the city budget is all drama. Meanwhile, on the other side of the building over at Cook County, they passed this sort of good news budget this week. Just how stark of a contrast are we looking at here?
Yeah, well, the procedure is one big difference, right? The county got their budget through basically instantly. Meanwhile, the city is months into a process that doesn't really have an end in sight, and no one's really sure where it's going to go right now. I think the other big difference, of course, is the county didn't have to raise property taxes, which is the good news that President Tony Breckwinkle was talking about.
Yeah, and you have a lot fewer commissioners that you have to wrangle to try and get instead of 50 mini mayors trying to agree.
Absolutely.
Rob, former Alderman Danny Solis began his testimony this week in Michael Madigan's corruption trial. Wasn't on the stand for very long before they broke for the week. The judge also told the jury they should expect to be in court well into January. Any surprise there, given the pace so far?
I am getting flashbacks to 2005, 2006, which I cannot believe that 2005 is almost 20 years ago. But the George Ryan corruption trial, which I covered when I first came back to Chicago as a reporter, that trial began in October of 2005. And it continued all the way until April. That is when the jury reached its verdict. And that was so long ago. When you'd go to the Dirksen Federal Building and babysit jury deliberations, maybe they have a verdict today. This was before smartphones, so like you had to rely on the kindness of strangers. Like maybe Paul Meinke could give you his old beat-up Sun Times, and you could read that to pass the time. But that happens. I mean, if you're a juror on that trial, and you could go well into next year because you have to go through every single little thing, financial records and stuff like that, forensic accounting, and that's public service for you.
It certainly is. It's not always pretty, but someone has to do it. Rima, with vote counting coming to an end this week, voter turnout for school board races pretty high, 53% of registered voters. What do you think got Chicagoans so engaged in this election?
Yeah, so the fact that this happened in a presidential race year, in a general election, huge reason. That's according to experts and the Board of Elections. And we'll see more of that in future school board elections that happen in presidential election years. Also, an expert was telling us that the fact that this was a novel election, that this was something that, advocates and organizers had been pushing for a long time, also helped. And so lots of different factors there. And I should note that 53% of registered voters, but of the people who actually showed up to the polls, it was actually closer to 80%.
Really?
Yeah.
So a good deal of interest there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, as we look forward to having a fully elected school board in a couple of years, you have to wonder whether that enthusiasm will hold once it's lined up with a midterm.
Yeah, and the same expert I talked to said that, you're going to have some incumbents running, but then you're also going to have new seats opening up, and so that could keep the energy going. But if you look, 5-10 years out, and you kind of see it wane down to 20%, you shouldn't be totally surprised, but I'm choosing to stay optimistic. So
yeah, there was also a really interesting UChicago study out this week about English learners. They found folks who become fluent by ninth grade, they graduate at higher rates than their peers. Late arriving English learners graduate at lower rates. Tell us a little bit about what that study found and what it might point to with the approach CPS needs to take.
Yeah, so when you look at public data for English language learners, it focuses on just kids who are currently learning English as a new language. The research study aimed to kind of separate those things out and draw attention to the fact that this group of students, there's a lot of nuance there. And so they found, yes, that former English language learners really outpace graduation rates, grades, SAT scores compared to their peers district-wide. But then when you look at kids who have been, who have not necessarily been deemed by the district as fluent in English, they earn overall like average, lower GPAs, are less likely to graduate on time. And so, the point was this should help us target supports for different kinds of students and try to figure out, what might be behind those figures.
Yeah, and I mean, when you look at all the, the thousands of new arrivals that the city has seen in the last couple of years, I mean, Melody, when you think about tailoring support to students, all the work we've seen CPS schools, all sorts of, parts of the city try to help meet the needs of these folks, just how important is it to take these sorts of things into account when you have, an influx of folks coming into town?
I mean, incredibly important. These are folks that, are highly likely to stay within the city of Chicago, and it's worth investing in these young people so that they can give back to the city in terms of whether that mean staying here, buying a home, having a family, going for that career that they've always wanted to, and not having a language barrier being something that stops them from doing that.
Yeah, and I mean, these sorts of issues, the classroom resources that CTU wants to see, I mean, how much does this play at all into the question of contract negotiations?
Yeah, so one of the things that the union says they're really far apart on is beefing up bilingual staffing. The district has routinely violated state laws when it comes to providing enough bilingual staffing. But the district is in a very tough financial position right now, and so that appears to be one reason why they're so far apart on hiring lots more people, more than they already have.
Yeah, and when you look at, the ongoing back and forth over CPS CEO Pedro Martinez, the district, or the union rather, trying to call Mayor Johnson in for support on the contract negotiations, I mean, how difficult does that make it, Jake, to get a deal done when there's still all this uncertainty about the leadership at the top of CPS?
I think it makes it probably incredibly difficult to not have a ton of direction, to not have that stability to close a deal.
Yeah.
it's really hard.
There was some more education news this week. Rob, we saw President-elect Trump tap former wrestling executive Linda McMahon to lead the U.S. Department of Education. She also headed the Small Business Administration during Trump's first term. Is she there to dismantle the Education Department? It's been a target before.
Well, I think it has been a target before over the course of the decades. That has been part of, like, the conservative wish list going back to the establishment of the Department of Education in the early 80s when it was cleaved off of the old Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. Mm-hmm. Probably easier to do that in 1982 compared to today, because if you want to dismantle the Department of Education and do, as President-elect Trump says, send it back to the states, you're saying to the 50 states, including some states that elected him overwhelmingly, here you go. Please establish and put together a large education bureaucracy to take care of all the functions that Uncle Sam took care of. And on top of that, you have a lot of parents nationwide who may have children who are reliant on services funded by the Department of Education. And going back to that old city council discussion, members of the House and Senate, if they feel that their electoral future is in jeopardy, they're not going to be behind that.
Yeah, and I mean, is this the kind of thing that CPS is looking at with perhaps worry, or are they sort of feeling like, let's see where this goes, things are status quo for right now?
Yeah, I think some of the concerns are around what the federal government provides, obviously, which doesn't make up, you know, a huge part of the district's budget, but that's where you get federal grants. That's where Title I money, which supports, you know, schools with lots of kids from low-income households, that's where that money comes from, too. So I think there's a question internally about, you know, what do we do if this funding kind of dries up or isn't quite available anymore?
Yeah, well, and, you know, looking ahead to the second Trump administration, we also heard the mayor earlier this week reiterate some of his comments about Chicago remaining a sanctuary city. Did we hear anything new from the mayor about preparations they're taking, or is he just sort of reiterating their stance?
No, he's reiterating his stance. He, you know, didn't really say anything new this week. But, you know, it stuck out to me. He's taken shots at Donald Trump. It's almost like he's goading him a bit. I think he called Donald Trump soft and small, and then he said, unlike in Chicago, we're big and strong. So, you know, he's taken a lot of shots at the president-elect.
I mean, is that the kind of thing that could potentially backfire? I mean, you know, when Joe Biden was in the White House, or still is, you know, it's a lot easier for Mayor Johnson to pick up the phone and talk to someone he has a good relationship with. Certainly having a Democratic president helps, but is the antagonism worth it there?
You know, I'm not sure, and I think time will tell. The mayor was also clear that, you know, he's ready to try to work with Donald Trump where their interests align. So, you know, Donald Trump's also someone who hasn't always taken jokes like that super well. So,
well, speaking of an outlet known for its jokes, conspiracy theorist Alex Jones's site InfoWars went up on the auction block, sold to pay off Sandy Hook families that a court found Jones defamed. Chicago's own satirical news site The Onion bought it to make InfoWars into a parody. Melody, what kind of an impact do you think that might have?
Well, Alex Jones is already fighting it. There's some, he's saying that there was a higher bidder, but in reality, sort of the financial package there was the money that's owed to the Sandy Hook parents. They bundled that into their bid, and so that made their bid valued at $7 million, and Alex Jones is like, oh, you can't do that. So he's trying to fight it in court, but we'll see what happens. I mean, at the end of the day, if they do end up getting it, turning it into a parody site, which some people will probably already argue that's better than what it is now, will be interesting to see how that ends up.
Rob, is something like this likely to change minds? I mean, is this just going to be like a digital version of the Colbert Report or something?
I think the Trump era and the Alex Jones content, and it's all kind of intertwined, it's impossible to parody. The reality shoots past parody every single time. In fact, I think if The Onion really wants to provide a service, turn InfoWars into like old-fashioned Art Bell style conspiracies. Like, talk about Area 51, talk about, you know, people being abducted by aliens, talk about, you know, little green men and Men in Black. Oh, bring back old school conspiracies, not this stuff. Give us the X-Files again.
Give me the good stuff. Well, I appreciate that. You four, certainly not little green men. We appreciate having you all here. Jake Sheridan, Melody Mercado, Rima Amin, and Rob Hart. and we are back to wrap things up right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
And that's our show for this Friday night. Don't forget, you can get Chicago Tonight and The Week in Review streamed on Facebook, YouTube, and our website, WTTW.com/news. Now for The Week in Review, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good weekend. All right, how badly did everybody get hosed in the snowstorm yesterday morning? Did you have to leave?
I had to go cover the CTU rally, and it had stopped, like, snowing, but it had started raining. Just worst possible, like, first snow of the season.
We love to see. You know, you have to, we know it's going to happen every year, and yet we still cannot help but complain. I think it's in our DNA.
Yeah, I was on the ninth floor of Prudential Plaza, and it was like a snow globe. I couldn't see anything. Like, what is this?
That's kind of a fun view to look out at, though. I don't know.
I just stayed home.
That's always the easiest way to deal with that. That always makes me think of when I was a reporter in Phoenix. I was in a radio studio and I looked out the window when a sandstorm was coming. And
it was like we
were just getting enveloped.
Wow.
And no visibility whatsoever. But yeah, up in Peru is a good view.
I've never experienced the haboob before.
I cannot recommend it, I have to say. It is...
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm committed to giving back to the community through law and philanthropy.